The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m. It's Maggie Thompson at Generation Progress.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Happy Thursday. We are almost to the end of the week. This is Maggie Thompson with Generation Progress for the Millennial Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. Yeah. I'm here in studio with literally one of my sort of sisters in arms. We've been fighting this fight, working with young people, making sure that we're primed to take over the world for a couple years now, Layla Zaden. She is with the Millennial Action Project and is doing all around incredible work, mobilizing young people around the country. Welcome to the show, Layla.
Thank you, Maggie. I could not be more excited to be here today talking about one of my favorite topics, which is how young people are slowly taking over the world with organizing and ideas and policy solutions. So thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so pumped. So one of the things I feel like we've been watching, and I know we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but with the post-Parkland marches and seeing, the speakers and the fact that they only had young speakers on the stage, and I think that made these events so much more powerful. It seems like people are acting surprised that young people are stepping up and that they're able to do this level of organizing and mass mobilization. But, you know, we've been sort of just seeing this in so many ways over the past several years. And I think what's new isn't the work that young people are doing, but that sort of grown-ups, for lack of a better term, are listening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I kind of had a real evolution of thought on this too, because as I'm sure your reaction was similar, you know, we've been doing this work for a long time. Young people have been organizing in their communities across the country for much longer than just this one moment as a result of Parkland. But I think, you know, I'm really grateful to all of the work that organizations like Generation Progress have done, my organization have done, to set the base for this moment in time where people can come to the movement and feel like, wow, it's so, you know, this is so crazy. This is wonderful. Look at how much young people can do. And that wouldn't have felt as easy or as accessible to people if not for the decades of organizing that young people had been doing on the ground and the institutions and the movements that have been supporting these young people. So, you know, I think without kind of that base layer of organizing, this moment would actually feel really different and a little sloppy, honestly.
Yeah, it would hit flat.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I was actually, so I unfortunately was not in D.C. for the march, but was in Chicago. And so I participated in the Chicago one. And I think I saw really similar things there just among the marchers and participants in terms of uplifting the voices of students, of young people, having a really diverse group of people. And I think that's important to note, too, since our generation is the most diverse generation. Gen Z coming up on our heels is diverse as well. And so amplifying those voices is important too.
Totally. And I think that was so important because when we worked together, we talked a lot about gun violence prevention and sort of the differences between what a youth-led gun violence prevention movement and other gun violence prevention movements looks like. And I just think on Saturday that was so crystallized for me because you're right, it was diverse. It was reflecting the diversity of our generation. It should be led by young people because we are the ones most likely to be killed by guns. And what was also cool was that, you know, obviously Parkland was sort of the final straw that catalyzed this particular moment, but you know, the young people on stage, they got the intersectionality of this so quickly.
Totally.
They didn't have to be pushed to not just talk about school shootings. They were talking about Chicago and cyclical gun violence. They were talking about young people of color disproportionately being killed with guns. And that's a fight that I feel like we've been fighting for a while to push people to be more intersectional about gun violence prevention. And these young people, they get it. That's just their worldview. It's not something that needs to be sort of reframed or changed or pushed. because that's just how they see the issue.
Right, absolutely. And that's why even more so we need to, you know, the grown-ups in the room, quote unquote, need to shut up and listen to these young people who just have such an inherent understanding of the intersectionality and the nuance. I think as a country, we don't tend to do nuance very well. And it's been...
Really?
Yeah, shocker, breaking news.
You don't think?
But, you know, watching these people speaking, and also, you know, people who didn't necessarily have a platform at a giant march, just watching kind of Twitter in my hometown, just people talking about, you know, how they made the movement inclusive and made their marches appeal to people who maybe are more conservative but wanted to participate in this kind of moment in time, asserting the, you know, the bad things that are happening and the very common sense solutions that can solve those bad things. I think that's not a cause for disagreement, and young people, wherever they are on the political spectrum, are standing up in this moment together, shoulder to shoulder, and saying enough is enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just on what you were saying about solutions, I think that was another thing that was so cool, because it was not just the fact that all types of gun violence were talked about, that it was a diverse group of young people and only young people that were speaking, mm-hmm. but the solutions, and maybe I don't know if this was the same in Chicago, but the solutions that the speakers were talking about were not just about regulating guns. Yes, that was a part of it. It was about high-capacity magazines and assault weapons ban, universal and comprehensive background checks, cooling off period, like all of those things mm-hmm. that regulate our access to firearms. But there was also a lot of talk about school funding mm-hmm. and investment in education, and this idea that, if we really want to stop gun violence, after school program funding is just as much a gun violence prevention fund policy solution as mm-hmm. background checks are.
Yeah.
Again, it's like that intersectional piece
totally.
That I feel like is so hard for people that aren't in
right.
this generation to get.
Right. Absolutely. And I'll give a shout out to some of the people that we work with actually at the congressional level. So Millennial Action Project, the organization that I'm with, works with young elected officials at the national and state level. And what we do is create space for these young legislators to come together, identify common ground, and actually act on solutions. And something that I thought was really heartening in the past few weeks was a bill that our Democratic co-chair of our Future Caucus, so that's the spaces that we create for bipartisan consensus, Future Caucus, Stephanie Murphy from Florida, with her counterpart across the aisle, Carlos Curbelo, who's a Republican, co-sponsored and got bipartisan support for a bill to lift the ban on federal research on gun violence. And I think,
so awesome.
You know, that's obviously, is that going to, you know, that's not a background check. It's not something that's going to stop somebody from getting a gun right now, but it's been so long that people just see guns as a third rail issue and something that people don't even want to touch. And I think seeing among the younger generation of legislators even a willingness to engage, a willingness to start taking steps towards solutions, I think that's a really important shift and an important paradigm that was brought about because of the pressure, because of the voices, because of the movement of young people nationwide. And it's really trickling up, I guess. I don't know if something can trickle up, but trickling up to the legislators.
Yeah,
prairie
fire. Yeah. It spreads.
Exactly.
That's so awesome. I want to talk a lot more about, you know, what this is looking like at the state level in particular. But we're going to go to a quick break. That was Layla Zaidan with the Millennial Action Project. Layla, where can people find out about your organization?
Absolutely. People can find me on millennialaction.org. And millennial has two L's and two N's because sometimes I spell
it
wrong.
Yes. No, spelling is hard.
Millennialaction.org.
This is Generation Progress, the Millennial Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Millennial Takeover of Leslie Marshall. I'm Maggie Thompson with Generation Progress, and I'm so pumped because literally I have my sisters in arms here in the studio with me. Sarah Adello, the Executive Director of the Alliance for Youth Action, just came to join us in studio.
Woohoo! Sarah, hey, everyone.
So pumped to have you.
I'm stoked to be here. A little reunion.
Yes, it is a reunion. We are all... Well, we've all been Generation Progressors, but these two have been in the youth movement fighting the fight for years and years. So
oh God, that yeah. makes us sound very old, Maggie.
I mean,
We're youth movement old.
Yes,
that's okay.
We are youth movement old. But, you know, that's, we're still young. We're, you know.
Wise,
we're,
I think.
Wise.
That's the word people use to,
we're
to
wise
say old
youth.
Nicely.
Okay, great. Yeah, the wise youth. Here to walk through the new youth-driven movement that's happening.
That just sprung up out of nowhere, huh?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so, Sarah, we were just talking about how this post-Parkland movement that young people have been doing this work for years, and the real difference now is just that older people are finally paying attention and taking it seriously and letting youth drive the work. And to make this sustainable, one of the things that I know we've always talked about is that, you know, this movement needs fuel and it needs investment. So I know that you've thought a lot about that with your affiliates at the Alliance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been so interesting and exciting to see folks saying, oh my gosh, young people, they're so great. And we're like, yeah, they really are. And young people have been for quite some time leading incredible work, whether it's immigration movements or LGBTQ rights or fights around policing, or our crew has done amazing work on voting rights. And what we keep trying to remind our friends is, you know, this doesn't happen out of nowhere. This work needs to be resourced because young people are certainly leading in this moment right now, but they're also the bench that we have on the left into the future, whether it's who's running for office or who's running other organizations or who's becoming donors themselves. We have to invest in young people now because of the incredible power that they have to make change in our country. And we've seen it throughout history.
Totally. And I think it's something for people who are listening to just really take a look at when you're thinking about representation in the spaces you work in, whether you consider yourself a donor, if you're on a local board or commission, whatever communities you're in, thinking really deliberately about, are you including young people at the table? Is that something that your organization is doing, that your movement is doing, that whatever aspect of community you have control over? I think that is one of the more powerful things to take away from this post-Parkland moment. When you put young people in charge, incredible things can happen. So make sure they're at the table with you.
Absolutely. And make sure they're getting invested in with mm-hmm. leadership skills. That they're, you know, one of the things that I think the left has to get much better at is when young people are leading is to continuously give them skills so that they're able to do this work for the long term. I am very lucky that I have been doing youth organizing for some time because an organization called Advocates for Youth invested in me when I was in college, and I was an organizer with them and later a board member and staffer, and then have hopped around the youth space for a bit. But if Advocates
and now Youth, executive director
and now a shiny executive director, aka fall person for an organization. But if not for Advocates for Youth investing in me when I was 19 years old, I would not be in this role today. Mm-hmm. And so that I think is the other thing that we forget is those investments from when folks are quite young can certainly pay off in the long run. And we have so much evidence to show that across the space.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. And I would say, too, you know, when you want that next generation of leadership, or when you want, you know, that new generation to step in, if you haven't been investing in a bench for a long time, it's too late. It's, yeah. You know, you're kind of screwed. And so you do need to be laying the groundwork and making sure that there is a long-term sustainable plan to build the movement, because that's what works and that's what leads to solutions, is having that long-term sustainable plan. And, you know, looking for instant gratification is not something that is going to solve problems in the long term. And so thinking about it as more of a holistic, you know, long-term solution.
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the things that, yeah, I think about this all the time when we're looking at some of even our programs, or I think about, yeah, like you said, Sarah, for me, it was Wellstone Action. Like, what was the paid, should be paid opportunity, mm-hmm. either through an internship or a training program or something like that, that got you in the door? And those things carry benefits for years and years into the future. And I think a lot of times, you know, when people are looking at funding youth work or supporting youth work in other ways, they are looking for that one-year turnaround, like what came out of this. And really, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, people that have come through some of our training programs and it takes them 4 years, but then they're running for office. But the thing that sort of kickstarted them was that sort of investment by an organization, training to give them the confidence and tools they needed to be successful. And then they mm-hmm. just built it themselves. You know, they went out and did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about New Era Colorado, which is one of our incredible affiliates that holds it down with the youth vote and incredible organizing on abortion and on student debt in Colorado, among many other things. Well, their founders right now, three of their founders are now well, two of them are in the State House in Colorado, mm-hmm. And one of them is running for Congress. That is like, and they started New Era Colorado about 12 years ago. New Era Colorado is now a powerhouse in that state and in this moment, but also look where their alumni are now.
100%. And not to go totally generational warfare here. I mean, I know sometimes it's so easy to slip into that. But this is something that, you know, much like our higher education system, like we used to invest in as a society. You know, there used to be more opportunities for young people to have paid apprenticeships or paid internships, or even states used to fund student associations that would have students paid to be in leadership roles to work within their student bodies. I know Wisconsin until, gosh, it was a little after I graduated when they stopped investing in that program. So it's one of those things. This is, you know, something that has existed for previous generations and we need to demand for ours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other point on that is, how are we making sure that people feel like it's worth their time to be civically engaged? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what organization had this report on civic deserts. It may have been Circle.
Mm-hmm. Circle.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting that there's so many people who are just getting left out because we're not even giving them an opportunity to plug into something and to connect to something. And then we turn around and act surprised that they haven't voted or haven't decided to run for office. You know, people need to take responsibility for that. And if we're not providing opportunities and systematic structures and opportunities for folks to get involved in a meaningful and validating way, then we're going to lose an entire generation of voters and elected officials.
100%.
So, yeah. Cheery outlook.
Well, but I think absolutely, and I think at the same time we see young people who are demanding that change in some of the what has been previously seen as some of the tougher places in the country for engagement, right? So Texas is a state that progressives have had hands off for too long, and we have an incredible affiliate there called Move San Antonio, who has been registering a ton of voters across San Antonio. Keep in mind, San Antonio is the seventh largest city in the United States. The infrastructure there is not much, to be quite honest. But certainly we've seen increases in youth turnout with the municipal elections that happened last year. Municipal races are clearly really important because you can feel a change much more quicker the more local you go when it comes to elections. And it's been so inspiring to see Move grow in that work.
Well, that was Sarah Dello, Alliance for Youth Action. This is the Millennial Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everyone. This is Maggie Thompson, the Millennial Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm here with Layla Zaden from the Millennial Action Project and Sarah Adello from the Alliance for Youth Action, talking about how 2018 is really the year where after this November's election, we can say that this is the year the youth are taking over. Like, really, you now have to pay attention to us because we're going to be deciding things from now on. So be forewarned. Mm-hmm. But Sarah, you were just talking about you have all sort of affiliates in states where young people are set up to make such a huge difference in these races. And can you just talk about why this year, like, is going to be a little bit different and where it could be a little bit different?
Absolutely. So, the Alliance for Youth Action is a network of young people political power building organizations that are based in doing statewide work or city work 24/7 year round and not just during electoral cycles. We know, for example, our colleagues at Circle just put out a really amazing report to show where young people can have big impacts on races this year. And we're so excited that's where a lot of our folks are located. So places like Minnesota, where the Minnesota Youth Collective just launched, Wisconsin, where Leaders Igniting Transformation is doing incredible work in Milwaukee, Ohio, where Ohio Student Association is literally changing the game with some awesome ballot measure work. So this is a huge year for the youth vote period. And we are here to make sure that youth groups in the field have the capacity that they need to register and turn out their peers and then keep engaging them after Election Day for important work like accountability work, making sure electeds are doing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think one of the things that we've talked a lot about, and we released a report on last year, is also what are the sort of systematic barriers to young people voting, and then what are policies to overcome those? And I know we talked a lot about, you know, same-day registration, early vote, all those things are good, but also really basic stuff like automatic voter registration, which sounds pretty wonky and like a system that government should just do and this shouldn't be political at all, but it is because our votes are being suppressed. Like, there are things out there that are now catching fire in state legislatures that are really going to amplify the amount of power that we have moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And there are, you know, one of the biggest barriers that young people face when it comes to voting is many of them are just not registered.
Yep.
Maybe it's because we move a lot, because we're moving for jobs, we're moving for school, we're moving for a lot of reasons.
Well, we can't afford to buy houses. So, you know,
exactly.
Moving around those leases, renting.
But. Yep. The moving is real. And also because sometimes there's really crappy barriers that exist, certainly for folks to even be able to be registered. So one of the things that our killer affiliate in Oregon, the Oregon Bus Project, they wrote and passed the first automatic voter registration law in the country in 2015. It was real and up and running in 2016 and had an awesome impact, and we've been seeing it passed across the country, which has been really excited. This year, last year, we had wins in Rhode Island, we had wins in Illinois, and I believe it was just the Maryland State House that passed automatic voter registration this week. So it is gaining momentum and steam because, yeah, like, your registration, you should be automatically registered. You update your license, your registration should follow you. You interact with the government agency, your registration should follow you.
It makes too much sense, right? I think everything else in our lives we can do with the touch of a button and, you know, not asking to register with that much simplicity. But I think that it's very incongruous with the way that we live our lives in 2018 to have such an outdated system of paperwork and trying to just, you know, enfranchise yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I think another kind of barrier to young people voting is kind of this just bigger issue of trust in the system. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of policies that kind of connect to that really basic issue. And so we do need to be thoughtful about how we want to push for changes in elections and campaigning when it comes to things like campaign finance law or even redistricting to build that trust up again among young people, honestly, not even just young people. I think an entire country that is slowly starting to lose trust in some of the basic institutions that can be strengthened by some pretty straightforward, you know, policy solutions.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we've actually got a caller right now that I want to take real quick. So we've got Paul on line 4 from Woodinville, Washington. I'm sorry. Paul, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, I want to talk about repealing the Second Amendment as is advocated by Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens. People think that's a very heavy lift, but when you want to talk about the youth activism, let's reckon back to 1971 when the 26th Amendment was passed. Now, that's my generation. That was youth activism. And the whole sentiment of the country was if you can be drafted at age 18 to be sent to Vietnam, you ought to be able to vote. And to touch on that, I mean, it is a heavy lift in the math of what you need to get an amendment to pass. So when you look about what you say about what's discouraging or what's got people losing faith, we really need the youth, because when you look at the redistricting in some of the states, like, say, Georgia or many of the heavy Republican states, it's been redistricted so heavily that Democrats have to get out 54% of the vote just to draw even in these states.
100%.
So what we need is a blue tsunami, not just a blue wave. And the reason
Paul, let me jump in there, because I really want to give Sarah especially a chance to respond, but I think one of the things that you bring up that's so important is when we're talking about voting rights and reforms, that some of the systematic voter suppression, without even looking at the partisanship of it, a lot of it is targeted people of color and disenfranchising them. And because our generation is so diverse, when you look at who the maps in North Carolina were surgically drawn to exclude, it was people of color, and that disproportionately hit young people. And that's why I think to your point as well, just like has happened in the past, young people need to be the root of these social movements for big, bold policy change.
Yeah, and you know, he's calling in from Washington that just had a really epic wave of amazing voting rights legislation that passed, from automatic voter registration, same-day voter registration, pre-registration for 16-year-olds, like a Washington Voting Rights Act.
Also, let's just have 16-year-olds vote.
There's awesome energy across the country to have 16-year-olds vote in local elections, which is incredible. But yeah, what he's getting to, you know, yep, the young people have changed the Constitution before. It's really about how are we making sure young people are resourced and have that energy is not going to nothing, right? We folks are talking about the blue wave, and I totally get it, but it's also like, hey, who's running? Who are we supposed to get excited about?
Yes.
Like, yeah, we want to participate, but are the folks who are running actually going to fight for the vision that young people believe in and deserve? And that's one of the big, you know, question marks we're throwing out there to candidates is like, you should be as good as the base, be like better, do better, like be where young people have been, minimally, because that is what they need to get engaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Sarah, you bring up such a good point about vision, and there's this tension, right, about, well, what are the policies or the laws that we actually can pass, and what is the North Star kind of vision that we should be aiming for? And I think too often people forget about what is the inspirational big picture thing that we're shooting for, and that is where I think we've seen in the past few weeks these young people coming up and re-inspiring folks to think in that way, and that makes a big difference, and that's how movements are made and won.
No, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that it's sort of this idea of a society that is equitable, that gives us the opportunity that we know is possible, that we've seen generations before get. And, you know, that idea is inspiring in and of itself. But I think what's so striking to me is that some of these policies that we're talking about, the policies in and of themselves are pretty simple. You know, it's not a radical idea that when you go and update your driver's license, you should register to vote. These are really simple things, but I think you're right. It's the vision that of the society we want to get to, where we all have the chance to weigh in and the opportunity and the investment to become civically active. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. And some of the policies to get there, there's no reason that these need to be partisan or politicized. And we see why they've been politicized and who did that. You know, to sort of hang on to the power that they have. But, you know, a lot of these things are really just simple things that I think will also give young people more faith in institutions that they've so badly lost as sort of our institutions have been cut down in the last decades.
Totally, totally. And you guys both know, right, what the fastest growing political affiliation is in the country.
Oh my gosh, I don't. Layla, tell us what it is.
It's independent, because people just don't feel like they fit into a partisan box anymore.
That's right.
And so you have to be talking about these issues in a way that connects people, and you'll find people already agree. And so there's no reason, as you said, Maggie, to make things partisan or politicize. Some really simple solutions that are not radical, that are not super complicated, and that a majority of Americans already agree on.
So that was Layla Zaidan with the Millennial Action Project. We're going to take a quick break and come back for our closing segment with Sarah Dello and the Alliance for Youth Action. This is the Millennial Takeover of Leslie Marshall. This is the Millennial Takeover of Leslie Marshall. I'm Meg Thompson, Generation Progress. So we were just talking on the break about, you know, we're so pumped that all of the sort of great youth organizing that has been happening for the last several years, you know, is being given the attention and the lift that it deserves in this post-Parkland moment. But sort of what comes next? You know, people have marched, you know, grown-ups are paying attention, for lack of a better way to put it. Sort of what comes next for our generation out of sort of all the things we've talked about?
Yeah, well, I'll jump in. I think from the perspective of somebody who works directly with young elected officials, I think our members would say they want to hear from their constituents and they want to hear from people. I think a march sends a message, but there's no substitution for sitting down with your representative at whatever level. It doesn't need to be your member of Congress, but your city council members or your state legislators, getting in a room with them and saying, hey, this is important to me and this matters to my friends. You know, I think that the elections are in November, but we don't make change just based on one election. We need to have an ongoing conversation, and building up to November, there needs to be a lot more kind of openness and engagement from legislators to their constituents to actually hear those concerns and have a chance to address them. And I would say the second part of that is, if you don't feel like your elected official or legislator is hearing what you're saying or acting on what you're saying, then you should run for office yourself.
Yes.
I think something that everybody learned in 2016 is that pretty much anyone can run for office and you may win.
You might become president.
There's tons of really great organizations that work with young candidates that provide support, training, mm-hmm. and, you know, being an elected official doesn't mean that you have to know everything about everything, and anyone can do it if you have the passion and the desire to hear your community and make a change. And so I would just encourage, if you're not getting the results that you want out of having actual conversations with your legislators, then you should think about running yourself.
Totally. And you don't have to jump straight to Congress. I think a lot of people here run for office and they're like, oh, that's scary. That's like Congress. That's too big. But it's literally like, think about the local races, like Sarah was talking about in San Antonio, your city council. Mm-hmm. Is there a board or commission? School boards. I know my obsession is boards and commissions, but man, your county commission probably has a lot more power and money to spend in your community than you think it does. So figure out what those sort of levers of power where you live are and go grab one of them. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, one of our alumni from New Era, Colorado, she is running for clerk in Boulder County, and clerk is a really important role if you care about how elections function. There are so many positions out there that folks are dying for. Sometimes, in many cases, people are running unopposed, which is just unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Like, voters should have choices when it comes to who they're voting for. These local races have so much power, we too often and forget that with our country's obsession with looking at D.C. always.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes it does seem like there's a disconnect, because I think one of the great things about the way our generation organizes is we have sort of an aspirational, inclusive, and global vision. And, you know, when you think about, you know, a young person who's organizing around climate change, I mean, they're literally thinking of things on the global scale. But I think a lot of times, and if you're talking to them about their local community, like, do you know who your soil and water commissioner is? Do you know if you have a soil and water commissioner in your community? I know it sounds wonky and nerdy, but that is the person if you want to put in sort of climate change mitigation solutions into your own hometown. Like, that's a position of power where you can really do that. So really thinking deliberately about, are you going to run for something? And it doesn't have to sort of, you don't start with Congress, like just look around and figure out sort of the power structure around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that kind of came to light, I think, in this, as you mentioned, Maggie, this moment after Parkland where people are giving the youth movements that exist the shine and the amplification they deserve, is that people realized how many youth organizations are out there who are looking, who all they want to do is kind of help connect people with the information that they need to make a difference, whether it's letting them know who their local commissioner is or giving them the resources that they need to mount a local campaign. And so I think there's tons of information out there. Millennials, Gen Z, we are the information generation. So run a quick Google search and, Generation Progress, Millennial Action Projects, the Alliance, all great places, I think, that can help point folks in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we are in this incredible moment that is part of a much larger movement. And we have to remember that, you know, marches are incredible. They are one tactic. Voting is one tactic of mm-hmm. the many tactics we have to use to make change in our country. And so, yeah, when it comes to the incredible groups that are out there working day in and day out, I mean, certainly you can check out AllianceForYouthAction.org. We work with about 22 organizations across the country that would love for young people to get engaged. And there are young people who, other youth-led organizations that have helped us get to this moment. I mean, just a few weeks ago, we were seeing incredible undocumented young people take over the Capitol as they were fighting for DACA and for a dream bill. We've seen young people over the past couple of weeks, the week or so, in Sacramento fighting against police brutality there. So groups like Million Hoodies and Dream Defenders, United We Dream, that have been leading these spaces, they are why we are here today. And we also have to remember that we have to love on these groups who helped us get to the places that mm-hmm. we're in now.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. So I think, you know, as people are thinking sort of their next steps, what is something that if for people that are listening that are not young, to do sort of a self-check, and, you know, what would be your first ask in this sort of post-Parkland moment where people are paying attention for them to do?
I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different things that people can do. I think first and foremost, if you can, if you're able to, if you want to, donate to an organization that you think is doing great youth organizing work. you know, resources are finite, and these groups are doing really incredible work, the ones that Sarah just mentioned, and there are a ton of other ones out there at the local level as well. You know, if you can part with $5, $10 or even more, consider making a donation to one of these organizations. There's also events I know that we host or that we look to host in places. If you can help organize a local event or host one where you are not the main event, but the young people who you invite are using the space to amplify those voices, consider that. And then I think just, you know, spread the word. I think the more people know about the organizations that are out there to help support and connect young people to engagement opportunities, to resources, and to each other, the more this movement will feel truly, you know, powerful, intersectional, and ultimately win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the thing that's really important to remember, too, is that empowering young people is not about saying there's nothing to be learned from older generations, that there's nothing to
100%.
Be learned from elders.
This is not about taking away.
And yeah, exactly. Like I said, I wouldn't be here today if not for an organization named Advocates for Youth, including a woman named Marcella Howell, who was my mentor, who literally cleared space at a table for me to be able to join. So who are the young people in your lives that you can help join the table where decisions are being made? How are you investing in them to take your jobs, right? We should be investing in people to take our jobs. We should mm-hmm. not be in these roles forever. I think Amen. That's one of the big lessons that I think groups that started around the civil rights era, whether it's labor or other groups, are learning that they might have joined when they were young, but we needed to be bringing people up along the way. Yep. And if we're not bringing folks up, we're all doing the work wrong.
Yep. So how do you reach behind yep. and bring folks after you? Yep. So we're running out of time here, but I want to make sure one more time that folks know where to find you and your organization. So Layla, where can people learn more about the Millennial Action Project?
Absolutely. You can find us online at millennialaction.org. And that's millennial with two L's and two N's.
Yes. Thanks, Layla.
Yep. And we're at allianceforyouthaction.org.
Fantastic. And I'm Maggie Thompson with Generation Progress. This is the Millennial Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. The youth are taking over this year. Everybody get ready. I hope everyone is as excited as we are. Thanks for coming in for a mini reunion, y'all.
Thanks. This is great.